The problem is that they believe that China wants to be just like us. They certainly want the economic successes that come from a freer market, but they're operating not a market society. They're operating a market-Leninist society. Joe Biden has said that repeatedly. When China rises, we all benefit. No, we don't. You have one degree of separation between the Biden family and the Chinese gangster who set up the Sinaloa cartel and the fentanyl trade. So is it really a surprise that Joe Biden doesn't want to call out China, draw attention to the effect of Chinese involvement in this activity? No, it's not a surprise. That's why this kind of corruption has very real consequence and affects the manner in which politicians will or will not confront the people that are putting money in their pockets.
All right, guys, let's cruise into the weekend, shall we? It's a little cooler here in our nation's capital, but I always say that this is the, we have to have a warm-up, then a little chill, then we get into full spring gear. So cherry blossoms are in peak bloom, technically. I put out some stuff on my Instagram over the last weekend. But anyway, I digress. A great conversation coming your way. We're going to pack all things China. We're just going to unpack it all. We're going to talk TikTok, the threats that we face, who's responsible for it, who did better, Biden or Trump when it came to Taiwan, to China policy. So much to break down. This is a real threat. This is an episode you must listen to because they want to destroy us. And you need to understand how and why and who. Who's taking that money? No one better to break this down than our guest today, Peter Schweitzer. He has written a ton of investigative books. His latest one, Blood Money, Why the Powerful Turn a Blind Eye, Why China Kills Americans. We talk Tony Fauci. We talk COVID. We talk Wuhan Lab. Even Bill Gates. We're going to get to it all. But before we do that, I want to start this conversation by telling you about two of the great sponsors that make this show possible for all of us. So let's hear from them and then jump into it with Peter Schweitzer on a great Friday conversation. If you're like me and you're looking to secure your financial future, I have the people for you to call. Call my friends at Bishop Gold Group at 844-984-1616 or go to bishopgoldgroup.com/Sean and they will sit down with you, whether it's online or over the phone, and have a conversation with you about whether it's a 401k, an IRA that you might have sitting around, or just diversifying your investment strategies into precious metals, gold, silver, alike. There's a lot of buzz about these kind of groups, and I'm sure you're getting hit up by many of them. Bishop Gold Group are the people that I trust. I took my money, called them, had a conversation about how to diversify my investment strategy with precious metals. We came up with a strategy that made sense for me. And that's why I think if you want to do the same thing, you can call them. You can trust them. They know what they're talking about. They're full of integrity. And if you go to bishopgoldgroup.com/Sean, you can join me in diversifying your investment strategy with precious metals. Like I said, in these uncertain economic times, this is a great place to diversify your investment strategy. So join me, go to bishopgoldgroup.com/Sean and you begin your journey with financial metals with a free promotional gift as well. When things go south and there's a crisis, whether it's for a day, a week, a month, maybe even months, will you be ready? I am, because I got the Patriot Power Generator 2000X. And if you go to 4patriots.com/Spicer, you can join me in getting one of these. The best part about the Patriot Power Generator 2000X is that when something happens, you lose power for whatever reason, maybe it's an attack on the grid, maybe it's a natural disaster, whatever, you will be ready. You can plug in your refrigerator, your tablets, your medical devices, your computer, your phones, so that you, your family, and your loved ones are taken care of during a crisis. Think about how important that is. Here's what makes the Patriot Power Generator 2000X different. It runs off solar power and the panels come free with it. You put it out, it charges the generator. Then when you bring the Patriot Power Generator into your house, there's no fumes, there's no noise. You plug into one of the several ports that exist and you can bring it back outside. No gas, no smells, no fumes, no additional things to do. This is securing your future for you, your family, your friends. Go to 4patriots.com/Spicer and join me by getting a Patriot Power Generator 2000X to be ready when emergencies occur. Peter, welcome to the show. Congratulations on another successful book. But of all the books you've written, and I've loved them all, this one to me was very personal in a passion way. Like I'm so tired of politicians paying lip service to China and about what we need to do and doing nothing. And in this book, I think you really expose what's really happening and what's at stake. If there was something with your experience that you went into this book and surprised you, what would it be?
It's a great question, Sean. Good to be with you as always. Yeah, I mean, I think what the book shows is the consequence of kowtowing to China. It's not the abstract but very real concern about a possible war over Taiwan. It actually involves the death of Americans. And that, I think, is most surprising to me, particularly when it comes to fentanyl. Most of the news coverage is that fentanyl is the Mexican drug cartels doing what they always do. The realities I show in the book is that actually the drug cartels are the junior partners. This is really a Chinese operation. They control it from head to tail. They are responsible more than the cartels are for this poison killing Americans. And literally nobody in this administration wants to actually say that. They want to pretend like China is, you know, not really involved, or the Secretary of State even arguing that, for example, the precursors, which are just one part of this. Secretary of State Blinken told CBS News that he thought some of the precursors were arriving in Mexico by accident. It shows the absurd lengths to which they're prepared to go. So that's probably the most shocking to me, the fact that Americans are dying and they don't seem to want to say anything about it.
I think one of the things that you said just now kind of made me think that we're preconditioned in this country to think of war as us sending our army and navy to go fight somewhere or to defend something. So in the case of China, it would be they want to repossess Taiwan. We defend Taiwan. Our navy, in particular, the Seventh Fleet, goes off to defend it. We get into some kind of war. But I think that what I at least perceive is and I think this is why what you touched on, and I just want to pull this string and see if we're on the same page on this. I think that China's war isn't a real shooting war. It's not a conventional war. It's we're going to flood your country with fentanyl. We're going to flood your country with disinformation. We're going to economically harm you and take you over. We're going to buy up your farmland. Their takeover is a much more subtle approach. It's a long-term war. It's not a shooting war in the conventional sense.
No, I think you're spot on. Look, we as Americans have done a very good job recently preparing for a kinetic war. You know, I don't need to tell you that. I mean, you've served in uniform, but we prepare for kinetic wars, and we think of China in terms of missiles and submarines and aircraft carriers. China does not think of war that way. They think of it as what they call disintegration warfare, which is a book written by two Chinese military analysts that has been highly touted by the military and embraced by President Xi. And on the front cover of that book, they quote Sun Tzu, the famous ancient strategist of China, who says the best strategist is the one who beats his enemy without actually fighting him.
God, I love that. Sun Tzu gets me excited because I love that. That's exactly right. And it's all there for us to read.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, they know, look, if we have a kinetic war with the United States, United States is going to do some serious damage to us. So what we need to do is just take it up to the threshold where we effectively try to fragment and disintegrate the United States. That includes fentanyl. I also talk about in the book about these Glock switches or auto sear switches. These are these small devices that if you attach it to a Glock handgun, turns a Glock handgun into a machine gun. Obviously highly illegal in the United States, certainly couldn't have one in China. But according to Homeland Security documents we got leaked, since 2018, China has been smuggling these into the United States and selling them to criminal gangs, to drug dealers. So I would encourage people, go on YouTube and Google, you know, auto switch or Glock switch police, and you will find videos of police driving down the street being subject to a barrage of machine gun fire. And that is because gangsters have these Glock switches. China gave those or sold those very inexpensively, targeting criminal gangs. Why? Because they want to sow chaos and dissension and division in the United States.
Okay, so, you know, you mentioned how China views war. I have argued, and it's not even argued, I've watched it. And it's interesting because when I worked in the Bush administration doing trade work, there has always been this feeling by our leaders, if we just treated them we call the term was responsible stakeholder. If we have this discussion with them, the strategic economic dialogue, and we put them on par, it's almost like we're shaming them, like a parent to a kid. Grow up, act like an adult. Yeah. This is how you're supposed to behave in the first world country. We believe that somehow they want to act a certain way, and that leads me to my question. I believe that on a bipartisan basis, we fundamentally don't understand them, and we keep trying to institute policies that we think they care about, and they don't. They don't want to be a responsible stakeholder. They don't care. They want domination. They want to be treated like a third world country in the WTO. Then they want to dominate you like a first world country. I get a kick out of the fact that our leaders, administration after administration, seem to think somehow if we just treat them like a peer, that's the way to solve this.
Yeah, it's like those old Michael Jordan commercials. I want to be like Mike. And the problem is that they believe that China wants to be just like us, and they don't. They certainly want the economic successes that come from a freer market, but they're operating not a market society. They're operating a market-Leninist society, which is the Leninist political control. And they look back at recent history over the last couple centuries, and they see the Opium Wars, the century of great humiliation, as something that denied them of being the great power of the 18th and 19th centuries, sorry, the 19th and 20th centuries. And now they're replaying the same thing to us, which is the internal weaknesses in China, which was massive opium addiction. By some estimate, 25% of the Chinese population was taking opium. They view that as the same way to undermine the United States and create a century of humiliation. So it's quite arrogant. Again, you're right, people on both sides of the aisle to assume that they want to be like Mike. They want to be like us. They don't. They have their own vision of what the future looks like. And by the way, that future is not a harmonious, cooperative view where all boats rise. Joe Biden has said that repeatedly. When China rises, we all benefit. No, we don't.
Right.
No, we don't. The relative power equation changes, and they use their power and leverage to manipulate us. I talk in the book about COVID. The things that they did specifically during COVID to maximize our body count. I'm not even just talking about covering up the lab leak. They actually enacted policies that, by all accounts, led to far more deaths in the United States as a result. That was intentional. That's how they view it. And our leadership class better wake up. There are a few that get it, but a lot of them don't.
Let's stick with COVID for a second. Will we ever know the origins of COVID? For certain.
Great question. I think we do. I mean, in a definitive way in which nothing else can be proven to be correct, probably not. But it's clear, as I point out in the book, China knew by November of 2019 that they had a virus and it was transferable from person to person. They covered up the virus, but they also covered up and continued to tell Fauci and others that it was not transferable from person to person. They did that for almost 3 months. Now, why did they do that? While they were lying on that, they cornered the market worldwide on PPE supplies. I don't mean just the the silly cloth masks. I'm talking about the K95 masks that were so critical for first responders. They bought them all up. They stopped shipping them, and they bought them from around the world. So when they finally told us at the end of January in 2020, oh, by the way, this does transfer from person to person, there was nothing available. They lied about ventilators. You remember the whole issue. Andrew Cuomo had a conniption on national television. I need more ventilators. I need more ventilators. That all came from a Chinese study which professed to say that ventilators would save all these lives. Guess what? Ventilators were a death knell. 97% of the people put on ventilators died. They quickly abandoned it here because they realized it was wrong. We embrace that because China spread disinformation that led to the killing of Americans.
So here's the thing that I don't understand, and I'm being serious. I want to break it into two pieces. First, the PPE, and second, what you just said about the ventilators, about the disinformation more than the ventilators themselves. On the PPE, making a K95 mask does not seem to be, and I'm not a manufacturer, but it does not seem to be the most arduous thing in the world. Like, you could have set up some kind of facility in the United States. We could have bought from somewhere else. Why is it that after going through this, we literally go, okay, let's turn to the person. I mean, it's literally turning to the arsonist and saying, yeah. Do you have fire extinguishers? We'd like to buy some fire extinguishers. Do you have any? And them saying, yeah, we've cornered the market on that. Like, I kept knocking my head going that we can't honestly be this stupid. I remember people running around sourcing these things for different governments, and there would be these reports and political publications about how so-and-so went into the PPE business and they're sourcing these things on a ship coming over from China. I'm thinking, what the heck is going on in this country?
Yeah, no, I mean, it's to me, it's like spousal abuse. You know, you hear these terrible stories where a spouse is abusing somebody, and the person being abused continually kind of makes excuses and say, well, they didn't mean it, or they were having a bad day. You see the same thing as it relates to the COVID response. You see that in Fauci's emails. Throughout, he's constantly making excuses for Beijing during COVID. And you're right, to this point today, we still have not really rectified this problem. And we still continue to believe that some sort of cooperative work with China on these issues, we should accept everything they say. Look at the issue of lockdowns, the lockdowns we got in California and New York, and the change in federal policy under Donald Trump. It happened because there was a study out of Imperial College of London by a guy named Neil Ferguson. Famous study came out in March that said, if we don't imitate what China does with radical lockdowns, 2 million Americans will be dead by the end of 2020. Well, that report, of course, was massively wrong. But if you look at the memoirs in the Trump administration, that report shocked President Trump. It shocked health officials in the United States and led to us essentially abandoning the traditional approach to medical pandemics, which was sick people stay home, everybody else acts normally. We essentially adopted Chinese lockdowns. Now, what's interesting about the Neil Ferguson study, it was done in Imperial College in London, that is the premier research institution for China in the entire Western world. That report was included data from China that was false. It included Ferguson, but it also included a lot of academics tied to the CCP in China. It was a complete act of disinformation designed to get us to move towards lockdowns. But here's the problem. Fauci and others didn't see it that way. Probably his colleagues still don't see it that way. So I imagine if we have a pandemic again, they are going to uncritically accept what China sends them and say, oh, no, this is just scientific information. We need to stop being so naive. To use the old Reagan phrase, we need to trust but verify. And we're not doing that.
And so what you're talking about goes to my ventilator question, and I think you've answered it, but I want to make sure I'm getting this right. Because I look and I say, these guys sent us a virus. They lied about it, right? They are not good actors. They've made very clear what their ultimate world domination goal is. And yet, when it comes to ventilators and lockdowns, we then turn to them to tell us the solution. And I've got to be thinking to myself, for all of the smart people in this country that invent stuff, that execute stuff. I mean, like, there are really smart people. This is where everybody, even the Chinese, come to this country to learn. And yet we're sitting there going, let's scratch our heads and let's turn to them for the solution. I mean, is it really that we're that stupid? I can't believe, and is one person, i.e. Fauci, was he really that this really comes down to him?
Well, yeah, it's probably more broad than Fauci, no question about that. But I have to say, I mean, one of the most startling things I discovered that I did put in the book was an email exchange that Tony Fauci had with a reporter from the New York Times that was covering COVID. And the New York Times reporter sent Fauci this email talking about how, you know, China was being so heroic in the way they were dealing with COVID, and that these lockdowns, you know, were a good idea, and the Chinese people were so brave. And then he went on to say that, you know, in contrast to America, where we're acting like a bunch of fat, selfish slobs. And Tony Fauci says, yeah, no, I agree with this. I mean, so there is a certain disdain that these individuals have for American Americans, and a certain, I would argue, misplaced admiration for the CCP and the Chinese system, because they lied about what they were doing, the effect that it was having. And you are quite right. These lessons aren't learned. It's naivete, but it's also arrogance. And they like, there's a certain attraction, Sean, to this top-down model that Beijing has. I'm not saying that these people are communists or CCP members, but they like this sort of top-down approach where in China, the so-called experts are not questioned. The policies are carried out and people obey. And there's a certain attraction, at least for some elites in the United States, to that model.
If you're a longtime watcher of the show, you know about my friend Leo Grillo. Leo is the founder of Delta Rescue, and you can see a lot of the work they do at deltarescue.org. Leo started his journey by rescuing a Doberman. He named the Doberman Delta, which stands for dedication and everlasting love to animals. That became part of a lifelong mission. He founded Delta Rescue. It's a lifelong no-kill sanctuary, not a shelter, a no-kill sanctuary where dogs, cats, horses can roam freely and get the nutrition and veterinary care that they need. It's all supported by people like you and me through our contributions, $5, $10, $100, $1,000. Whatever you can do, if you're an animal lover, helps keep Delta Rescue going. And if you go to deltarescue.org, you can see some of the amazing videos of the work that they do. But also at deltarescue.org is the estate planning kit. If you can help make Delta Rescue part of your estate, that'll make Leo's mission an enduring one, one that continues well beyond all of us and the here and the now. So if you're an animal lover, please go to deltarescue.org, help in the short term with a contribution, but then also make it part of your estate planning kit. Again, I've hit on this over and over again. Like, they sent us a disease, we turned to them, we bought our PPE, we've bought our prescription drugs for them, we continue to look for them help. Have we learned our lesson? Is there any hope, or is this literally just going to happen, continue to happen, whether it's manufacturing or drugs? Are we in a dependency mode here where we just need them too much? Are they too big to fail? Or actually, is there a way forward where we can break away from China? Because I think the bigger problem, that at least I look at this, is that there is a dependency issue. That as much as we'd like to say it, we can't break away from them because economically and we're too tied to them.
Well, I think we can make the choice to break that dependency. You're quite right. We are dependent, but it's not a fait accompli. And there's no law of economics that says we can't make a choice that when it comes to certain industries and certain products that we can break that dependency. The problem is the most effective lobbyists that China has in the United States are on Wall Street and in Silicon Valley. Industries that have profited enormously from access to the Chinese market. Remember when President Trump imposed tariffs on China when he was president, whether one agrees with the tariffs or not is not the point. The question is what did China do, Sean? They didn't go to Washington or the White House and complain about it. They went to Wall Street and they went to Silicon Valley and they said, guess what, guys? You need to go and lobby them and tell them to knock this off, because if they don't, it's going to hurt your bottom line. The same thing exists anytime an attempt is made to create greater economic independence. You look in the area of renewables or green energy. What the Biden administration is doing is encouraging greater dependence upon China. They dominate wind turbines, solar panels, EV batteries, 80 to 90% of the market. And there's really no concerted effort to separate ourselves from them. So it is a massive problem, and it is not being dealt with effectively in Washington right now.
Compare the record of Trump versus Biden when it comes to China, and then who does China prefer?
Well, I think they clearly prefer Biden, and I think that's not only because of the policies, but it's also because of this personal financial bond, which has a real effect on policy. So I think the preference is for Biden. It's not that Trump was perfect. I think that Trump, because he has a history, he's a deal maker, he's a businessman, I think he put too much stock and may still put too much stock on his personal relationship with Xi. You saw that with fentanyl. Trump was the first and has been the only president so far who has directly confronted China and called them out on fentanyl. The problem is that Xi told him, we'll take care of it. Trump said, this is great, fentanyl solved. And it wasn't solved because Xi lied to President Trump. So I think he's probably learned his lesson from that. So he hasn't been perfect, but he's been stronger than Biden. But the Biden financial connection, I think, is absolutely critical here. And I'll just illustrate it in one area, particularly the area related to fentanyl. This was quite shocking to me when I found this and then put it in the book. The Bidens in 2017 got a $5 million interest-free forgivable loan from a Chinese businessman. This is a loan they've never repaid. They got $5 million in 2017. That businessman, Yi Yi Ming, was business partners with a Chinese gangster named White Wolf. He goes by the name White Wolf, who's the head of the UBG gang. And the UBG gang literally is the gang. Everybody in Mexico acknowledges this, is literally the gang that set up the Sinaloa cartel in the fentanyl trade and made them kings of fentanyl. So think about what I'm saying. You have one degree of separation between the Biden family and the Chinese gangster who set up the Sinaloa cartel and the fentanyl trade. So is it really a surprise that Joe Biden doesn't want to call out China, draw attention to the effect of Chinese involvement in this activity? No, it's not a surprise. That's why this kind of corruption has very real consequence and affects the manner in which politicians will or will not confront the people that are putting money in their pockets.
So to this loan, who's the actual signatory on it? Is it Joe Biden, Hunter, James? And is it disclosed or is this something that you found?
This was on the Hunter Biden laptop. There is no written signed agreement, like so many of these loans in Biden world. There's no written document, but it was an email from this Chinese businessman who made clear in the email, this is from the Hunter Biden laptop, that this was a loan not to Hunter, but to the Biden family. This is in 2017 after Joe Biden has left the vice presidency. This businessman gave the $5 million and it was a loan, interest-free, forgivable. It's never been repaid. And it is confirmed in the recent reporting by the House Oversight Committee with bank transfers. So we don't know the money came. And this businessman,
Peter, hold on. This is what I don't like, because we're having these hearings about Hunter Biden, right? I assume that these guys said, you got a loan for $5 million. Where is that money? Have you paid it back? Wouldn't you have assumed that that was the case, that James Comer and the others asked about that?
Yes, they have asked about the loan. And Hunter Biden said it was good faith seed money for a business investment. And then when he was asked to show any paperwork for that, he didn't have any paperwork for that because there is none.
But isn't that this is where, like, sometimes I get frustrated with the Hill. Isn't that illegal? If you give me $5 million and call it a forgivable loan, I have to report that somewhere, right?
Yeah. Well, this is the evil genius of the Biden approach. You are only required to claim the money as income if it's no longer a loan. And the fact that it is structured as a forgivable interest-free loan for a reasonable period of time, the IRS doesn't designate how long, you don't have to make payments on that. You don't have to claim it as income. Now, there will be a day of reckoning if there is accountability for this, but this is all very well calculated and done in a definable way. So the problem is, you know, is it illegal? Absolutely, it should be illegal. Is it to the letter of the law? We don't know, but it goes to the core problem, which is the Bidens received, based on the email, based on wire transfer, some $31 million from Chinese businessmen. There is no discernible business, service, product, anything that they offered for this because Joe Biden was the product. And this is the consequence of that. People say, how did this affect Joe Biden? Here to me is a very clear-cut example. Joe Biden will not call out China on fentanyl, period.
So based on that, and this is what I don't understand about this investigation, that to me is a very compelling piece of evidence that shows the connection between the Biden family and China. Why, and I know this is outside of the purview of your book, but I've got to imagine that you've had some conversations or some thoughts on this. Why aren't House Republicans making this a central piece of the case and saying, where's the $5 million? How many other family members had access to it? Where's the repayment structure? What did you do with it? I mean, to me, that's something that every single person, when you say that to me, boom, lights go off. And I'm saying $5 million. I mean, if it was 5,000, I'd still probably say that. But the idea that $5 million and an unforgivable interest-free loan, that's eye-popping. Why why is that alone not getting more attention?
It's a great question, Sean, and I probably would defer more to you on that because you're the messaging guy. But what I would say is one of the challenges that Republican committee has had is that so many people come to those hearings sort of with their own agendas. I think Comer's done a great job. His investigators have done a great job. But let's remember, the last time we had a hearing, we had a member of Congress from Georgia who, you know, pulled up pictures of Hunter Biden, sort of quasi-pornographic pictures, and wanted to talk about human trafficking. You had other members of that committee that wanted to make speeches rather than focus on the central core issues. Yeah. And this is the problem that has plagued Republicans in the House. And it'd be great to hear your thoughts on as well. Just poor messaging. They don't have consistent, clear, simple, direct messaging.
No, see, the funny thing about this is when I was the comms director, the communications director for the House Budget Committee, we treated the hearings almost like a press event. We knew what questions we had. Here are the things that we want to get to. And we farmed out the questions. Peter, you're going to ask this. Sean, you'll ask this. Mike, you're going to ask this. And we made sure that we got to a point because the goal was to elicit information and messaging. I agree with you. These guys get up and it's all over the place. And then if you're trying to figure out what to cover, you're going, you know, it's 18 pot shots as opposed to one central target. I agree with you. This to me is where we miss the mark because when I watch these hearings and I come away, I don't know what the takeaway is because they don't have that long to drill down. And if they actually had a systematic approach where it says, Peter, you asked this. Sean, when he's done, you're going to follow up and ask the following question. And then Joe, you're going to ask so that we actually have some sort of continuum of messaging and an arc that we get to the bottom of something, that we can't just have someone go off for 5 minutes and get us nothing. And I think that's exactly the problem. I want to go back to COVID for a second. I apologize because I know this isn't speaking of arcs. No, but I was thinking about this. You know, you mentioned Fauci. We're talking about COVID. We're talking about Wuhan. There's all these, you know, does Fauci get away with this? Does Bill Gates get away with what his involvement? Is that real? I mean, I keep thinking of all these people and there's a lot of folks on the right that have accused him of stuff. Is this sort of over for them or will there be any day of reckoning for all of these folks in their role or their lack of accountability?
Well, it's a great question. I think when it comes to Tony Fauci, there still needs to be further investigation looking at precisely what he did. Now, I'm not a lawyer, especially I don't know law in that particular case. It does seem to me pretty clearly that he did perjure himself based on the evidence that Rand Paul has put out there. I also think there needs to be greater transparency about his efforts to kind of cover up the origins of the virus and to cover up the joint research that appeared to be taking place that potentially created this virus. That is all a debate. But I also think, look, we have to look at where we're going in the future. And what do I mean by that? If we get too focused on we need to get this guy, and I mean by get this guy, prove a legal criminal charge, it's going to get bogged down in a lot of detail. I don't favor that. I think exposure is important. And to your point, messaging has to be so key in the way we focus on this. And we have to be smart about it. I mean, look, to just go back to what you were talking about with the committee, one of the criticisms I would have of House Republicans is they've allowed the Democrats to set the agenda. You know, they're saying that all the corruption, you haven't shown that Joe Biden himself got any money.
Bingo.
That's not necessarily technically true. I think they have. But here's the point. The bribery and corruption law in America does not say that the politician has to get paid. If their kids get paid, if their spouse gets paid, if their adult son gets paid, it's absolutely the same thing as if they got all the money themselves. And yet the Democrats get up there and say, oh, Joe Biden didn't get any money. There's nothing to see here. That's irrelevant. And Republicans need to call him out on that.
Well, this is why it goes back to messaging. I think to the average American, they're sitting there saying, okay, what did Joe Biden do wrong? And the Democrats say there's no evidence that Joe Biden got anything. And the Republicans start talking about Hunter. They're missing the connection that says, do you know that the law doesn't require that? And I didn't until I think it was either Comer or Jim Jordan on the show made that point that you're making now. Let me ask you, the thing that I found fascinating about the title of your book, Blood Money, Why the Powerful Turn a Blind Eye While China Kills Americans. When I think of blood money, I think of like, you know, those movies where somebody makes a deal and they're taking cash and willing to kill somebody for it in some form or another. Who are the powerful? Is it the Wall Street and the Silicon Valley types? Is it the politicians? Is it all the above?
It's all the above. I focus in the book on certain political figures. Certainly Joe Biden is central to that. I also think Mitch McConnell has been very mute on these issues. I think it relates to the financial ties that his family has with their shipping business to China. The bottom line is that if you talk to anybody in that industry and look at how the Chow family business is structured, if Mitch McConnell were to call out China in a way that would anger them, they could destroy the family business overnight. So they've kind of got him over a barrel. But you also have guys like Gavin Newsom, governor of California, who bends over backwards to China. He went to China recently and again said, I'm not going to call them out on fentanyl. I'm going to talk to them about it, but there's going to be no finger pointing. As I point out, if you look through the history of Gavin Newsom from mayor of San Francisco to the present, it's quite startling. He has a long time associations with numerous figures that are directly tied to Chinese organized crime, including Chinese organized crime networks that are involved in the drug trade. I mean, that's a pretty stark thing to say, but it's absolutely backed up in the book. As mayor of San Francisco, he had a guy in his transition team who was involved in organized crime. He appointed the head of Chinatown Economic Development, was a dragon head in Chinese organized crime. He became friends with another guy who is a dragon head in organized crime who went by the name Shrimp Boy. He actually took taxpayer dollars and put it into this guy's nonprofit until people in Chinatown said, what are you doing? When Gavin Newsom set up something called China SF, which was to bring Chinese mainland dollars investments into San Francisco, he could have picked any Chinese businessman in the world. He picked a Chinese businessman close to the CCP, but also known to be linked to Chinese organized crime. And that's who he picked. And lo and behold, many of the early businesses that came through that program had direct ties to these Chinese criminal networks. So, you know, again, does Gavin Newsom want to have a conversation about Chinese organized crime involved in the drug trade and the CCP complicit in that behavior? No, he does not. And he doesn't mean that he's getting paid, but the blood money is he's basically getting protection. He is protecting himself and he is looking the other way, knowing full well what is happening to people in California. Fentanyl deaths are up 1,400% since 2016, and he will not confront China on this issue.
Yeah. Theme over and over again, not confront China. At least to some degree, we have taken, at least in my opinion, one step this last week, I guess it was. We voted in the House to overwhelmingly require U.S. ownership of TikTok. There are some that argue that, you know, this is misguided, that we're targeting TikTok when we should be going after Facebook or vice versa, or that they don't really pose that much of a national security issue because we've got Project Texas and Oracle storing the data down there. Where do you come down on this legislation specifically about what to do with TikTok? And remember, it's not a ban, it's just to require U.S. ownership, which, you know, ultimately may end in a ban, but at least in terms of what the short-term goal is.
Yeah, no, I think the bill is the best solution to this problem. And to people who think, well, you know, maybe it's a Chinese company, mainland China, but it's nothing to worry about. You know, as I point out in the book, the algorithm that ByteDance uses, ByteDance is the parent company to TikTok. That algorithm is not only a company secret, it's a state secret designated by the Chinese government. And ByteDance does joint research with the Chinese Ministry of State Security, which is their police state, and also with a propaganda ministry. And some of the research they do includes how to manipulate people online. So this is what this company is about. And in Blood Money, I also quote extensively from Chinese military officials and from people with the Ministry of Propaganda describing how they are already using this to manipulate emotionally young people in the West to their strategic benefit. One military officer calls it the ultimate Trojan horse. So this notion that, well, are they a threat? Are they not a threat? They're not having this debate in China. They think right. This is fantastic. They view it as a great tool of manipulation. And China controls this company. What's being presented, I think, is a very reasonable approach, which says, look, we're not going to destroy shareholder value. You can sell this to somebody. Chinese investors are going to make money. American investors that currently have a stake, they can remain stakeholders if they want to, or they can sell it and make money. But you are not going to be allowed to. You have unfiltered access to young people in America, given these ties and the sort of things that you are doing. And to me, it seems like a slam dunk.
So to the parent out there who says, my kid's on it, they're having fun, they're just watching cat videos, and the entrepreneur that says, hey, I'm providing for my family out there, you'll be taking that away from me. How do you answer that?
Well, I'd say, look, if you pass this law and entrepreneurs in America lose their access to TikTok, that's because the parent company refuses to sell it. And if this were a legitimate business, why would they not just sell it? We force the sale and divestiture of other companies all the time. Under CFIUS, foreign companies aren't allowed to just come in and buy whatever company they want. As far as children is concerned, I would just encourage people to look at the section in the book on TikTok. It is chilling what these individuals say when they're describing what TikTok does and how they manipulate young people emotionally, how they get them riled up emotionally. Then the young people think it's righteous indignation. And they say, when they do that, we know we have them, because they think they arrived at this conclusion on their own when they actually didn't. And when they are at that stage, we can now inculcate our ideas and values into them. And it's not like they're going to have placards of Chairman Mao and this is how they think they're going to persuade young people. It's a very sophisticated and subtle approach, and it's laid out in detail. We quote from them extensively in the book. So I would say, don't be simplistic about this. Look at what China's saying about this, not what our politicians are saying or even what I'm saying. Look at what Chinese officials themselves are saying about this, and I think people will be quite stunned.
All right. In the last minute, just answer me this question. Let's hypothetically say role play for a second. I am running for Congress. I get elected in this coming cycle. I want to take a hard line on China. What are the top 1, 2, 3 policies that I, as a new member of Congress, should pursue to reverse the tide?
Great question. First thing you got to start with is the CCP political influence in Washington. The fact is that TikTok and ByteDance have 6 former U.S. senators that are lobbying for them right now. They have former senior Trump campaign officials, the former campaign manager for Barack Obama. It's ridiculous. The notion to me that a Chinese company can buy that kind of access and influence in America is absolutely ridiculous. Second thing is, we need legislation that says that American politicians and their family members cannot be doing deals in China, whether it's the kind of Biden deals, which are completely dirty and illegitimate, or whether it is the Mitch McConnell type, where there is actually a legitimate business behind it, but it creates this kind of pressure. I would say deal with that part first, and then you can start tackling and dealing with these other issues, including fentanyl. We should not be having a normal relationship with China, talking about trade deals and cultural exchanges, as long as they are killing Americans intentionally and are unprepared to do anything about it to stop it.
Amen to that. Peter Schweizer, thank you for all your time today. Congratulations on another amazing book. And look, I got to tell you, as somebody who, if you watch this show, you know how much I care about this issue. Peter has basically written the Bible as to what the threat that we face. And as he said, with respect to TikTok and other things, how we can correct this. So I urge you, go on to Amazon or wherever you get your books, buy a copy, download it on Audible, whatever, I don't care. But understand the threat that we face. I appreciate you all joining us this week. We've got another great week ahead of us next week coming up. Please continue to subscribe, share this with your friends, help grow the show, YouTube, Rumble, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, wherever you get your things. And, you know, you can do more than one. There's nothing that stops you. It's America, for goodness sake. Have a great weekend. We'll see you back here next week.